what is exactly required for the solo flight? So who should consider becoming a sport pilot versus a private pilot? If your instructor does not click on their IACRA application that they can speak English, do you know what you have to do? How old do you have to be to get a sport pilot certificate, and how old do you have to be to solo? Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com. And let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Carson, what are we going to talk about?
Today we're going to talk about sport pilots.
Sport pilots, that must be because we were talking about them a few weeks ago and just giving kind of a rough overview of what?
Mosaic. Mosaic has been huge lately. I've heard a lot of people talking about it.
Everyone's talking about Mosaic, including us, and that's the reason why we are.
It's been a pretty big development in the aviation industry, especially flight training and everyone involved with that. And I think it's made a lot of different things available now, one of them being the sport pilot certificate.
And it's making it more attractive because that sport pilot certificate means you can fly a lot more airplanes coming very, very soon. So today we're going to dig really deep into telling you what the requirements are to become a sport pilot and what it'll do for you. Of course, it's not going to get you a commercial pilot rating, or you're not going to be able to fly professionally, but you will be able to fly with your friends and family, which is mostly what we all want to do to start off with anyways, right?
Of course. And just one quick disclaimer for today. We did our own research on all these requirements. If it is different in any way from what the FAA is saying, FAA is the source of truth as always, but just want to throw that out there. But this is everything that we gathered on a sport pilot certificate.
Perfect. So let's start off with eligibility requirements. Carson, how old do you have to be to get a sport pilot certificate, and how old do you have to be to solo?
Yeah, so this is not any different from the private pilot license. To hold a sport pilot certificate, you have to be at least 17 years old. The only part that may differ, and it's because I'm not really too sure about these, but balloons and gliders, you can be a minimum of 16 years old, which I think is cool.
Yeah, and actually, you can solo at 14 in a glider, which is pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah. Austin could solo a glider if he got a glider rating.
Austin's 14?
Yeah, he's 14. He started high school this week.
Oh, well, I'm officially that's a weird one.
Old.
Yeah, we've known that though.
Yes, thanks, Carson. Yes. Yeah, so you got to be 17. You can be 16 to solo. And balloon, I'm not sure, but glider, I know it is 14 to solo. These ages align directly with FAA regulation.
14 CFR Part 61 305.
There you go.
See, we even cite our sources. We're so responsible.
So responsible. You must be English proficient, must be able to read, speak, write, and understand English. This is a strict requirement, and your CFI actually has to sign you off on it. Just to go on a quick little side quest here, if your instructor does not click on their IACRA application that they can speak English, do you know what you have to do?
What do you have to do?
You have to go to the FAA's office, the FISDO, and you need to go take a little test with them.
No way.
Yep. And they have to.
Even if you're a complete native, you've spoken your whole life, that's the only language.
Somebody made a mistake on an application. Yes,
that's what you have to go test.
You might walk in, they might waive it. I don't really know anybody who's done it, but technically you're supposed to go test.
Has that been a situation you've seen before?
No, but I've heard situations happen like that.
Oh, that's such a silly mistake to make.
That would be a terrible mistake to make. I would not want to see that.
Here's the new part is the medical requirements. So that's kind of always been a draw for sport pilots. So what are the requirements for that, Brandon?
So you can either hold a third class medical, just like now. You can have basic med, just like now. Or you can have a U.S. driver's license. So it's got to be current and valid driver's license instead of the FAA medical. And you have not to have been denied, revoked, or suspended a third class medical certificate or special issuance in the past. So if you're really scared about that third class, you think you will fail it, then you should just stay with the driver's license and not go get a medical and just know this way.
The FAA also covers themselves, though, with the next part, which is you must not have any known medical condition making you unfit to safely operate a light sport aircraft, which exactly. I think can be so broad.
That is very broad. That's a CYA for sure.
Yeah, definitely on purpose. And then the other part, you must comply with any restrictions on your driver's license itself. If you have just terrible vision like I do, Thanks, Brandon.
You're welcome.
I already called myself out. You don't need to point to.
I really was hoping you were going to forget. I was like, ready. I was like,
phew. Yeah, terrible vision. Yeah, you know, that's part of your driver's license sometimes, and that you must wear lenses that correct.
By the way, if you're not watching us on video and you're listening, Carson wears glasses.
I do wear glasses. Thanks.
You know what screwed up? I don't wear glasses almost any portion of my entire life. I even passed my driver's license. Doesn't say I have to wear glasses at all, but my FAA medical says must wear corrective lenses.
I'm going to report you to the FAA.
I wear my corrective lenses when I fly.
You do. I've seen it. You look silly.
Thank you. Yeah. Glasses are much cooler than yours.
Oh, I know.
Yes. All right. So outside of that, if there's any other restrictions on your driver's license, you must comply with that as well. That means if you lose your driver's license for any reason,
you also lose your flying ability because that essentially acts as your medical.
Correct. And if you had a medical and let's say you got a terrible thing on your driving record, like a DUI, you can actually go through the process of keeping that medical valid and not ever losing the medical, which allows you to continue either working or flying, even though the driver's license has been revoked. But in this instance, you will not be able to fly because you've lost that driver's license.
Yeah, I've always heard getting a DUI and being a pilot are just a terrible combination.
Yeah.
Like it's just a legal nightmare and medical battle nightmare.
I mean, if you're going to be drunk driving, you shouldn't be flying because what's the odds of you doing it up there?
Yeah.
Hopefully not good, but yeah, you should not be doing that. If you want to go drink, and everyone knows I'm a big fan of wine, just use an Uber.
Yeah.
Works out real nice that way. Yeah. Outside of that, what are some considerations if you're a student pilot, besides either a medical or driver's license? Tell us about the minimum training requirements for a sport pilot certificate, which are phenomenally awesome. Although I do not think that you're going to be a proficient pilot with these minimums. So I'm going to put that out there just as a caveat, because if you do get in these minimums, you're going to have to be living in somewhere like Kansas or Oklahoma or something. There's no way you'd finish this. I don't know. There's no way in Southern California or in Florida anywhere. This wouldn't happen. Maybe I totally Florida, agree. But not here.
Yeah, well, there's a minimum flight hours. And we double-checked this because it sounded crazy to us, which is why Brandon prefaced it with that. The FAA mandates a minimum of 20 hours broken down with 15 of dual instruction with the CFI, 2 hours of dual cross-country, and 5 hours of solo flight. And this is kind of an interesting one, which must include a solo cross-country of at least 75 nautical miles total, full stop landings, 2 different airports, 1 leg must be at least 25 nautical miles. So a little bit different from the private pilot ones. I don't remember if there's a total, but I do know 1 leg had to be 50 nautical miles.
Yeah, Carson, if you want to get your PPL, it's 150 nautical miles with the first leg or 1 leg being at least 50 nautical miles. Every cross-country I usually did was over 50 to each location. And by the time you get back, you've done over 150, right? Somewhere like 170, 190, whatever it might be.
So I think the whole point with these requirements was that you're flying a light sport, which just inherently can't go as far. It's a lighter plane.
Yeah.
So having a shorter cross country makes sense, but it's almost exactly half the requirements. You know, a PPL cross country is 150 nautical miles total.
It is half the requirements.
Yeah. It just doesn't have a time limit, but you know, you're going to fit
limit?
That.
What are you talking about? Time limit?
Like a time minimum that you have to hit. You know, you have 5 hours of solo flight.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, you have to have 2 hours still have cross country. Yeah, but
you still have to go and get more.
Solo. Yeah, that makes sense. Similar to kind of part 141, actually, which doesn't necessarily have a time requirement. It just has an action requirement.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But in practice, I do not think I would ever go fly with somebody who had 20 or 21 hours of flight time.
I'm just thinking of myself at 20 hours. I was not confident. That was before I even hit my, you know, the stall I keep talking about, landings of... Yeah, I don't know how to land and I forgot everything. You know, that block, I didn't even hit that at 20 hours. That was at like 30 or 40 hours.
Oh.
So
not was everyone's just not, like me, Carson. Soloing just over 10. I just like to mess with
my I wish I could do my private training all over again.
Honestly,
get it at 9.
Honestly, I look back and I'm thinking to myself, I probably should not have soloed then. I felt confident and ready when I did, but I was very early.
I saw a pretty dumb flight instructor who had a student solo at like 5 or 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Insane. How'd that turn out?
The student was fine. Instructor quit a little bit after that.
Oh, as they probably should have.
Yeah, definitely should have.
All right. So how about ground school expectations? I know that the PPL ground school is quite difficult because you don't know what to expect. It's just not expecting what you don't know, right? Yeah. So how is the ground school experience different than a PPL? Is it very much different or kind of very similar?
I want to say it's pretty similar. You can do it either with an instructor or just at home, an online course like I did, a lot of people do. It has to cover the essentials. So FAA regulations specific to sport pilot, which are part 61, subpart J, Juliet. Thank you. I remember that one. I'm good. pre-flight procedures like weather, runway data, fuel planning and alternatives, navigation, aerodynamics, systems, accident reporting. So pretty much all the same things, same materials. Just a couple parts like subpart Juliet, which is specific to sport pilot.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think it's much different whatsoever.
There is still a written, so that's still fun. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
You can't get away from the writtens no matter what. But I think writtens are actually pretty important. It's a good milestone. And especially with a private pilot or a sport pilot, you know, it being your first rating that you actually go and get. Certificate. Sorry, I don't know how you feel about that still. Being the first one you go and get, you know, that written's an important milestone that you have the bare minimum knowledge.
I would agree. Next thing we're going to break down is dual instruction. Total dual instruction is going to be 15 hours. That includes 2 hours of cross-country dual. Additionally, students must receive at least 2 hours dual flight instruction within 60 days prior to the check ride to remain proficient, which is the same as a private pilot certificate as well, by the way.
But with these minimums, I have a hard time seeing someone who doesn't get all 20 hours done in 60 days. I mean, minimums only.
Yeah,
it's minimum. Not being proficient enough to take a check ride, which is up to you and your instructor, of course. But I have a hard time seeing you not be able to fit in 20 hours in 60 days.
You know, I've seen students struggle to do 1 hour a week. So you never know.
Yeah, it all comes down to the financial part. We talk about that a lot.
It does come down to the finances too. But yeah,
having everything set up ahead of time.
Awesome. So we talked about solo. What is exactly required for the solo flight?
5 hours total of solo time. One solo cross country. We just covered those requirements. 75 nautical miles, two different airports. One leg has to be 25 nautical miles or greater. Solo maneuvers are the other part, which is not any different from the private pilot. You have to go and do solo maneuvers. At least I did 141, so that was part of it. Yep. You have to go do solo maneuvers, takeoffs, landings, all part of your preparation for your check ride.
Exactly. What's next?
After that is the actual check ride with the DPE. There's going to be an oral and a flight portion, just like every other check ride. So I'm not too sure about what the difference would be. I'm assuming you have to do all the same maneuvers, all the same takeoffs and landings, same pre-flight requirements. Do you know anything different, Brian?
Yeah, so for a sport pilot, you're going to have to do pretty much all the same requirements. You're going to have to do normal crosswind takeoffs, landings, steep turns, slow flight, power on, power off stalls, ground reference maneuvers, different types of approach to landing, steep approach to landing, things like that. So you're going to have to do quite a few different things.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's up, Brian.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show. Fly a rectangular course. Oh, that's always been a hard one for me to hit. You know, I could just never find the right time or space to practice that.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. That's always...
was the absolute worst.
I'm so sorry. No, it's something we always discuss whenever we went over part 61 or part 141. It always said you have to fly a rectangular course. That's part of maneuvers. And we always joked around about how just a terrible requirement that is, because every time you're in a traffic pattern, you're flying a rectangular course.
Yeah, if you don't fly the rectangular course in the traffic pattern, then you're not going to.
Well, it might not be a perfect rectangle, but we always talked about how just silly that was a requirement.
I know, it's pretty funny. Outside of that, you need to make sure that you are properly endorsed for said check ride.
You're not a stickler on that, right?
Yeah, I'm the biggest stickler on that. 61, 65. It is now
Hotel?
Juliet.
No, it's Juliet.
I believe.
Well, I think this is a pretty important thing because a lot of people are going to go and get more of these sport pilot ratings with the changes in Mosaic. And I think that there may not be as much knowledge from a CFI at a normal flight school on what the requirements are for sport pilot endorsements. So I think it's really important, even if you're listening to this in a CFI, that you go take a look at this and make sure you got it all right.
I mean, you can look at 61, 65, Juliet, section 21. And in there, it says that you need to know what's in subpart Juliet as well, part 61. And it says it must hold a valid student pilot certificate, which is what you get off of IACRA. Flight instructor is given discretion in developing a training program to meet the requirements of 61309, which basically means you can just train them to meet those requirements, basically. And to operate in... Oh, there is something that's a little odd about the sport pilot certificate. You actually have to get certain endorsements for certain airspaces, and different types of aircraft. But I believe with Mosaic, that's going away. So I don't want to quote that. And I am going to guess in the beginning of next year or end of this year, we're going to have a 6165 Kilo.
Oh, new one.
Hotel, then Juliet, and then Kilo should be next. So Carson, kind of last thing on this particular item, the oral portion, how long does it last? And then how long should the flight portion last?
So the oral portion, not too much different from a private pilot check ride, about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Of course, that's just an average. Any check ride can go a lot longer. As we know, with a CFI check ride, those could be anywhere from 4 to 8 hours. But believe it or not, the requirements are all the same for an oral portion. That all should be around 2 to 4 hours. So,
yeah.
But typically, a little bit shorter, there's a little bit less material, followed by about an hour of flying. So not too different from a private pilot check ride.
So prior to Mosaic coming out, which is effective October 22nd in 2025, they're going to be changing a whole bunch of things. So we're just going to be talking about that. They're going to remove weight limits. They're going to be increasing the stall speed to 59 knots for the pilot or 61 knots for the aircraft. They're going to allow from 2 seats before to now to 4 seats. By the way, this is a big deal. I mean, a 172 now will be classified as a sport pilot flown aircraft.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. There's no more just only one passenger and a pretty low weight limit overall.
Yeah, and you couldn't fly at night at all before. Now you can do it with a sign-off.
Kind of like that there's a endorsement for private pilot to be able to fly into Class Bravo airports.
As a student, yes.
As a student, sorry. Yeah. But similar to that, you can tack on, I guess, extra abilities if you go and get these extra endorsements, which are pretty much all just requiring you to do that particular thing with a CFI.
Absolutely. So let's just kind of go over some really quick differences between sport pilot and private pilot. The cost, it's less expensive. Training hours are minimum of 20 versus minimum 40. Obviously, that's going to correlate into less time regardless, right? Yeah. You're going to have to still be proficient on maneuvers and things. So I don't really know how you'll get to it in 20 hours.
I'm interested to see as more people go down the sport pilot route, exactly how long it takes them on average. You know, I know with a private pilot, it takes roughly 50 to 60 hours on average. So I want to see how it turns out with sport pilots.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we could look up that data because there are people that have done sport pilot already. But now I think we're going to get a lot more data on that and kind of see what it'll look like because people are going to start doing this a lot more often, especially if they just want to be like a recreational pilot. I know there's an actual term called recreational pilot, which no one actually gets. People will actually become a recreational pilot, which would be kind of cool. You can also use it as a stepping stone. You could become a sport pilot first. That way you can start getting PIC time prior to becoming a private pilot. Because right now, the only way you can get PIC time while working towards a private pilot, and PIC time is gold, by the way, you want a lot of PIC time. So also medical requirements are probably the biggest thing, driver's license versus third class medical, et cetera. So who should consider becoming a sport pilot versus a private pilot?
At this point, I'm thinking everyone.
I think almost everyone.
It's incredibly cost-effective to really enter the aviation industry and start flying, especially people with medical concerns. If you can't get an FAA medical for any reason, and it's not going to really impede your ability to fly, this is a great option. People who just want to fly recreationally during the day, just take a buddy up on a weekend. And student pilots who are really testing the waters.
I would even argue, here's another point for people who've had like a troubled past. So if you're
like
in
yourself?
Not like
no,
me.
No, different kind of troubled past.
Nice, squeaky, clean record in all parts of my life. Thank you very much.
Sorry, different kind.
Yes, different kind. So if people had issues 20, 30 years ago and they get in trouble with the law or they get a DUI 20 years ago, right? And things like that, where they know they probably would not be able to get a medical without jumping through hoops for a year or 2 years and a lot of money. Now, you're not going to have to jump through those hoops. So it's going to be good for those people who are on the right track now, and they just made mistakes in their past, but they've cleaned themselves up. So it will be beneficial to those types of people as well. Or if you had, I don't know, if you had like a major surgery 20 years ago, and that's going to stop you from getting a medical. Or if you happen to take medication, which would make it so you cannot get an FAA medical. I think this will improve the lives of so many people with like, I don't know, they have like depression and things like that. Now you won't have to go get the FAA medical, which you would have been denied for in the first place. And now you'll be able to fly.
You know, cure depression. You can't be sad in the sky. Are you kidding me?
Now, granted, nothing we're talking about today has anything to do with medical advice, just a forewarning out there. But yeah, I think those would be some pretty cool things. Why do you think sport pilot matters in GA today? And then let's kind of wrap it up.
I think the big overarching theme of this is that it really just expands the access to flying. The barrier to entry is way lower with the cost being lower, hours being lower, and the amount of planes that you can fly just skyrocketed. So I think it's just huge. People can actually start flying.
Is the sky the limit?
The sky is never the limit, Brad.
No. Is outer space the limit?
Oh, yeah. Actually, 18,000 feet is the limit. You can't fly into class alpha.
Oh, first the light pilots. Sport. Oh, that was a good catch on that one. Thanks, Carson.
Yeah, so the sky's kind of the limit.
Yeah, just for sport pilots. Actually, I'm curious. Can you fly over class alpha airspace with a sport pilot certificate?
It's Echo up there, right?
It is. So the answer is yes.
So if someone takes you through that airspace and miraculously your light sport airplane can fly at, was it like 65,000 feet?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Then yeah, you could fly.
Yeah. Okay, good. There's a technicality that we found for us to fly.
That's
really high.
I mean, if you put your plane on the back of a 747 like they did with the space shuttle, right? It just takes you up there, drops you off. It'll drop like a brick, but besides that.
Well, could you get a power glider that could fly that high?
With a lot of oxygen? These hypotheticals are crazy. We're just diving off the rails.
It is possible. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. And thank you for making this podcast a success so far. We have hit over 100,000 downloads just a few weeks ago. We hit 1,000 followers just on TikTok alone.
Yeah, that one made me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah, it was kind of nice. I mean, we've done that on other platforms already, but it was cool to finally get there. I know that last year we only had 56 when we launched.
We did.
Which was interesting. Now we're over 1,000.
Everyone starts with zero, you know.
Everyone we'll get starts there eventually. With zero. You got it. Well, if you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, Brandon@aviationmentors.com, Carson@aviationmentors.com, or for our producer, Mark, it is producer@aviationmentors.com. Don't forget to reach out to us on LinkedIn if you'd like. Just mention that you listen to us on Aviation Mentors, and we would be happy to connect with you. Also, don't forget to hit like, follow, subscribe, share, all the great things we're supposed to do on social media and on whatever streaming platform you are either listening or watching us on. We really appreciate it. It's a huge part of helping us grow the podcast and helping us grow the aviation community. So thank you again for listening today.
Thank you, everybody. And as we wrap up for the day, remember, we're going to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See ya.